Hello, this is Vivi on 90.8 FM, Radio Campus Grenoble, with English Talk Radio. My guest today is Paul Thompson, Vice President of the British Conservatives in Paris. We'll be talking about the Brexit aftermath and if Brexit will ever really be over. Hello, Paul. Welcome to English Talk Radio.
Hello, thank you for inviting me.
I'm sorry?
Thank you for your invitation.
Ah, okay. I didn't hear you the first time. The travel ban, Paul. Are we free and clear now to travel between London and Paris?
Not completely, no. I have experienced this myself recently because I went to Manchester and from there to London and then back to Paris, leaving Paris on the 2nd of October. And it was particularly complicated at that point with the requirement for a PCR test before departure, for another one within 48 hours of arrival, a traveler location form that had to be filled out in advance so that they could track you down at any moment during your stay in case of necessity. And the rules have been alleviated somewhat because now all that is required in terms of testing is one test antigenique, as it's called in French, lateral flow test, is called in English, I think, within 48 hours, which is a simpler one, also less expensive.
Okay. What is the best source for COVID travel rules that you've found?
There is a government site, an official government site, which is very well organized, very clear, and it gives you in all the detail you want, the information you need about paperwork, testing, and so on. And it even has a function if you want to sign up to it, which I did, to give you updates.
Wonderful.
So if you just Google travel to UK, you'll find this official UK government site at the drop of a hat.
Brexit and British passport holders in France. What to do if you have neglected all information on how to remain in France and the deadlines have now passed? What do you do?
I have not... I don't really have any particular competence on that one, I'm afraid. But I would say what you should not do is just sit on your hands and hope the problem will go away. I think,
right,
on the contrary,
right,
one should address it ASAP.
Well, I'm particularly thinking, Paul, of people, elderly people who moved here many years ago. They're perhaps not on the internet, or perhaps they're not quite picking up on the information. And those people, I would urge, call the British Embassy in Paris.
And I think that's a good good advice, yes.
And I think that's a good start. Because, as
absolutely,
you said, you have to do something. You can. It's no good doing nothing.
Yes, absolutely.
Fish and sausages in the news. Is my French fish really English? And where are my sausages?
Your sausages are stuck on a boat somewhere in the Irish Sea, but don't worry, help is on the way. And as far as fish is concerned, there may be altercations coming up off the coast of Jersey, but the Royal Navy, which has already intervened once this year to try to restore order, has indicated it may well do so again. So no need for panic on that front either.
Okay, so we are going to eat. We are going to be festive.
Festive, I don't know, because there are transportation problems, not just in the UK, but all over Europe. There's a gigantic shortage of HGV vehicles, as they're called, to as they're referred to, absorbing that shortfall of drivers is not something that can be done overnight, and therefore there are some concerns about getting turkeys or capons into the oven of everyone who wants one, because of these supply complications, but it's certainly a hot topic that is being worked on by in the government sector and also by trade associations, associations of road haulers, for example, and not just in the UK, but also on the continent. So it doesn't mean that people that there will be nothing to eat, but it's already the case in the UK for some shops that there is a less choice than usual.
Well, it depends what you want to eat. I think there's a job opportunity there. I think if you're looking for work, get yourself a license and drive these enormous lorries. I guess it's pretty hard, but it's quite difficult to pass that because there's a serious responsibility.
It's a serious responsibility. And Boris Johnson at the conference also alluded to the working conditions of these lorry drivers. I hope you'll excuse me for quoting him, but he says that at the moment they often have to urinate in the bush, which is not ideal, and that something should be done not only to improve their salaries, but also their working conditions. That is an area where improvement appears to be called for.
What about the colour of my passport? Do I need to change it now the UK is no longer in the EU? Because mine says European passport, but it doesn't expire for 2 more years.
I honestly don't know the rule, but I would be very surprised indeed if you needed to change it before its normal expiration date. It's a document that's officially issued. It must remain valid. That's common sense. However, you will have the benefit of a shiny blue passport when you do renew it.
Yes. Well, the rumor mill is fantastic on passports, saying, you have to do it immediately. You can't leave your house unless you change your passport to a British blue one. And they're 10 times the price they used to be. So the rumor mill's going crazy, but I have resisted and I'm assuming that sanity will take over.
One does need a passport, though, to go back and forth between the UK and the continent. That is a new rule which came into effect on the 1st of October, so that's pretty recent. And that is something people should bear in mind because for years and years and years, one has been able to go back and forth between France and the UK with a carte nationale d'identité. If you're French and if you're British, I guess you'd be using your passport anyway, but there has been a change of rule there.
You are listening to 90.8 FM, Radio Campus Grenoble. Right to live in France, options if you have missed the deadline. We've covered that, and I think we've given the best advice, which is contact the British Embassy in Paris. Have you got anything to add to that?
No.
Key documents for Brits living in France. And what about my maiden name on my French health pass? It does not match up with my other documents. Have I stunned you?
Yes, that's something that I have not looked into. Normally on French documents, the maiden name is included sometimes with the married name. And so that is something one should just expect because that is the practice in France.
Well, it came up for me when I had my first vaccination against COVID. And as the printer spat out the piece of paper, I noticed something. It was a name that I haven't seen for quite a while. So I said to my pharmacist, but I can't use that because it doesn't match up with my passport and my driver's license and all my other documents. And he was quite worried. He hadn't seen it before. So he checked with them. And by the time he had an answer, there was an answer in the newspapers which said, this is how we're going to do it in France. It doesn't make any difference.
Right. Well, that's what I would have expected to be the case, because those are simply differences in usage, you could say, and they don't really go to the underlying legal situation or to your underlying real identity. You're still the same person after all.
It's kind of shocking when that name comes up on your phone, though.
Well, I've been living in France for some time now, so I'm less and less shocked by things that I may encounter.
If all else fails, French citizenship is a possibility. Does it really take 5 years?
I think that is the basic rule. But 5 years of residence in France, yes, that has been the basic rule for ages. And there are exceptions, for example, for someone who has married a French citizen.
Right.
The period will be shorter, although in recent years, because there has been a great deal of abuse on that front, the authorities look very closely at even if they're legitimate, they consider it's their duty to take a close look because there has been widespread abuse. But yes, my understanding is that 5 years of residence is the basic rule.
Do you think there is widespread abuse? You have people trying to get French citizenship for other reasons other than they want to live here?
Has there been abuse?
Yes.
There's absolutely massive, not necessarily by the people listening to this radio or their ilk, but there has been massive abuse in France and in other countries of the immigration systems, and so yes, there's no doubt about it that it's a very sensitive system, and the authorities have made attempts to make it more rigorous, although it must be said that at the same time it is still quite porous. But it is, I think the nub of your question is, are the authorities going to be sort of looking at this, you know, sternly and carefully, because there is a certain amount of abuse going on? The answer to that is yes.
So if I am a British subject, which I am, and I decide I want to marry a Frenchman or woman, at this point, application would be through my local, mairie, prefecture?
I think it's through the local mairie.
Okay. And at that
point...
That
would be the logical starting point. I have a little doubt there. It might be the prefecture. I have myself gone through this process, and but quite a long time ago, and it was through the mairie of the 7th arrondissement in Paris, and the I remember that is where I picked up my French passport when it arrived, and the documentation basically went through there. I had to go with my wife, who happens to be French, to mm-hmm. the prefecture for a little interview to see whether we looked as though we were genuinely married or not.
To see if you were real?
Yes, that's right, to see if we looked like a married couple. And we seem to have passed that test.
Did you argue in front of them just so they were sure?
to demonstrate. Well, not too vigorously, but we did try to convince them.
So at that point, you apply, and it ends up going to the Ministry of the Interior, I understand, in Paris, because they want to make sure that you're a good guy.
And then they will check whether you have a criminal record or not, yes.
Yeah. And at that point, when it's all done, and the 4 years have gone by, or the 5 years have gone by, and you become a French citizen, is there a ceremony at the prefecture?
Not in my case. I'm not aware of there being a general practice. I know that in Canada, for example, mm-hmm. which is my country of origin, I think that is something that is part of the whole process, a little ceremony. It was not the case for me. I just went to the mairie to pick up my passport. The fellow was very friendly there and exchanged a few sort of kind and friendly words and so on, which was quite which I appreciated, but that was, there was nothing more to it than that, other than his actually handing over the passport.
Okay, and what about your Canadian citizenship? You kept that?
Yes, that is the rule in France. Double citizenship in France is considered to be non-problematical. That is the, you know, the French approach, at least that's the official French approach. It has been for some time, unlike some countries like the United States or Germany, or I think Japan, where it's either completely impossible or at least frowned upon. Mm-hmm. In France, no, you don't need to do anything to retain your, you don't have to make a special application, for example, to retain your native citizenship. It's just an automatic result.
Your best advice to British passport holders living in France, what would you say to people as far as Brexit is concerned? Are we halfway? Are we through it? Is there more coming? Do we need to pay attention?
Well, there are many different dimensions of Brexit. I'm not sure which ones you have in mind. On the economic front, there's a certain amount of disruption in the UK, but I think that will just be absorbed over time, and not over a very long time, but over the short term. That's my prediction. Changes in basic legal rules, those have already happened. So that's, we're not sort of in the middle of things. We've already sort of come out the other end of the tunnel, as it were. For example, the need to use a passport to get back into the UK. There's another dimension which may be of interest to some of your readers, and that is the sort of quality of the relationship between the United Kingdom and France. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. at the moment, it has mm-hmm. suffered quite a bit through a combination. I think it goes down to the initial weakness of the UK's bargaining team under Theresa May, and the European Union picked this up very quickly and therefore sort of did with them as they wished. And when Boris Johnson came along with his team, which was much more tightly knit, very uniformly pro-Brexit team and very motivated to get the job done, as Boris would say, the whole tenor of the British negotiating stance totally changed. And this allowed the deal to actually get done. The EU all of a sudden started making compromises because they knew that they could no longer get away with murder, as had been the case with Theresa May. I have great respect for her otherwise, but in the Brexit negotiation, I don't think she did a great job. And in France, the French authorities, Emmanuel Macron en tête, has been very, well, Emmanuel Macron in particular, has been very critical of the whole Brexit process. And I think it partly has to do with the fact that he thinks that it's just a big mistake. He's a convinced European, and he can be quite, although he's highly intelligent, he can be quite intolerant of people who do not share his opinions. And therefore, France has taken a very aggressive line in negotiations pre the withdrawal agreement and pre-Brexit, and also post-Brexit. And the case of Boris Johnson and his team, il y a du répondant. In other words, there has not been a sort of passive reaction, but a more combative spirit. And this has led to a sort of very regrettable degeneration or worsening of the relationship. But nevertheless, I'm earnestly hopeful that that will be overcome. Britain and France have very close economic ties, very close military ties, intelligence sharing ties. They also happen to be close neighbors just geographically. So they have many overpowering, I hope, reasons to, you know, just get on with things and get things back onto an even keel. At the moment, with these disputes about fishing, for example, that is it's a bothersome dispute. There's something, if you're a fisherman directly affected, of course, your livelihood's affected. It's a very big issue. It's something that has to be dealt with. I personally hope that both sides will be pragmatic and say, look, we have to get over the sort of ill feeling that Brexit has generated and get back down to healthy working relationship, which involves a lot of mutual admiration, emulation, and so on, as well as competition between the two countries. And that's going back centuries and centuries and will carry on into the foreseeable future, I believe.
Well, Paul, we've seen this many times before, relations between the two countries. We love you. Absolutely. We hate you. We love you. We hate you.
Exactly. Absolutely.
But we have never had Brexit in the way we have now. Brexit has changed those things. The attitudes have changed. I mean, I don't like to bring up bad stuff, but the fishing situation, as far as I can understand it, there are certain licenses to fish in certain waters. And because of Brexit, those changed slightly. And so certain ones were issued, but not all, that the French were expecting. The expectations were different. And so because of that, by the end of the week, there's supposed to be a blockade. Now, whether that will happen or not, I don't know. But at the same time, we come and go. I think, you know, my best friend is a French person. My worst enemy is a French person. It's normal. We're so close. We're so compatible in many, many ways.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, as far as this fishing, I happen to be a lawyer, and the it's better to have sort of good laws, i.e. well-drafted, that take into account the realities of the matter you're dealing with, than to have ones which kind of miss out on important empirical aspects. And it appears that, I'm not an expert on fishing, but it appears that in connection with this fishing dispute, the rules as adopted in the withdrawal treaty are not well adapted to the sort of real life situation on the ground or in the water, because they require there's a basic rule that French boats can continue fishing in waters where they were already fishing pre Brexit, but they have to be able to prove that. They can't just come out and say it. They have to be able to give some evidence. And there was apparently in the agreement a specific reference to a form of evidence that should be used, namely actual communications between boats. And because this would be very reliable, something you can't sort of cheat with or manipulate. But the and for the bigger boats, there's no problem, no problem at all from what I understand. However, for boats below a certain size, did not have the equipment to engage in these communications. Correct. They were not required to. Therefore, they are not able to provide the evidence that is actually called for by the rules. The British authorities have said, well, we understand the problem, come up with some other evidence, and they have had to come up with other evidence not actually provided for by the rules. And then the British authorities or Jersey authorities have to adjudicate the matter, as it were. And in a number of cases, the decision has been, no, I'm sorry, but that evidence is not convincing enough. The answer ideally would be to alter the rules, to take, you know, to adapt them to the fact that for these smaller boats, the rules just simply do not fit the whole, you know, background. But I think that's what should be done, actually. But that would involve amending the text, which would be cumbersome. So if you're directly affected as a fisherman, then it is can even be an existential problem. But so it's it is a very serious matter for those people. But I don't think I'm not aware of there being bad faith on either side. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's one of these situations where sort of cool heads need to prevail, and someone needs to sit everyone down and say, look, we need to come up with a pragmatic solution to this problem, and just sort of bang heads together, as the expression goes, to come up with that. I expect that's what will happen. Quite honestly, I just can't imagine that either country would really want to let things get out of hand. It's said that by some people that Emmanuel Macron is sort of exacerbating the issue for political purposes, because the election is coming up next year, the presidential mm-hmm. election in France, and therefore he may espy a potential political gain for him in that's politics, but in making a big deal out of this. But
right.
But even so, I would hope that a sort of practical.
We've got to go, Paul. We
okay,
have to go.
Will be found.
I would say that's a very fishy story. Thanks for being a guest on English Talk Radio. More fun and games to come, I'm sure. Goodbye, Paul.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
I was talking to Paul Thompson, Vice President of the British Conservatives in Paris. You can listen to English Talk Radio on 90.8 FM, Radio Campus Grenoble, Wednesday 1900, repeat Sunday 12:30. And don't forget the podcast, www.campusgrenoble.org. I was going to say thank you to Bertrand, but he got lost on his way here. So it's thank you, Louis. English Talk Radio.